Hi, this is Sabina, founder of the conscious fashion brand Sabina, and your host for today. You're listening to Connecting People. Every week, we'll talk to an impressive guest who is willing to share his or her unique story with us. Now you might think, oh no, another life advice podcast? Well, don't worry, it's not. This is Connecting People, a podcast that focuses on the journey rather than the goal, celebrating thought-provoking people and anyone who strives to make a change. Don't expect advice or a guide to a better life. Our journeys are all different in their own and special way. We want to show that every story is unique and there is no right or wrong when it comes to choosing your path. Our goal is to create a space for people to tell their personal stories, inspire, and of course empower others to think outside the box. Let's get started. Today's guest is Matthew Drinkwater. Matthew works at the crossroads of fashion, retail, and technology to head up London College of Fashion's innovation agency. Using emerging technology to alter the way that the fashion industry is making, showcasing, and retailing, Matthew and his team are building a pathway for truly digital designer businesses. On top of that, Matthew has delivered a stunning range of projects that have captured the imagination of both the fashion and technology industries. In 2018, he worked alongside Lucasfilm's immersive entertainment division, ILM XLab, to bring their new performance-driven augmentation technology to London Fashion Week. That was a project that demonstrated the potential for digital models, digital clothing, and a world filled with real-time visual effects. Matthew was named as a fashion tech trailblazer changing the course of retail by Drapers, and The Wired called him a pioneer and visionary. I spoke to Matthew about his fascination with Japan, the importance of technology, and what the future of retail might look like. Let's get started.
Hi, Matthew. How are you today?
I'm really well. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I can't wait to find out more about your journey. So obviously, we are in a very special situation at the moment. We are recording from, I'm in my bedroom. I don't know, where are you at the moment?
I'm in my dining room.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually have the space to myself, which is quite unusual with children running around. So yeah, hopefully we'll remain undisturbed.
Very nice. Dining room is very nice. Are you in London at the moment?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, same for me. I'm also in London. And we're still in full lockdown. So nothing was lifted so far in the UK. And while some parts of Europe having new rules and then coming to sort of a new kind of normal, we are still in lockdown. How has it been for you? I try not to talk too much about Corona, but I also feel it's necessary to put things in perspective. So first question will be, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. Yeah, it's been clearly a very unusual time, but I have to say from a work perspective, it's been really, really positive. We've been incredibly busy. And I think, you know, you know about our work and what we do. And we always set out with the mission at the college to be that guiding light for the industry, to kind of say what we believed was coming within 3 to 5 to 10 years time and build those projects which demonstrate it. And you know, a lot of the time what we were talking about was digitizing every element of the industry, from creation to showcasing to retailing. And so often a lot of the projects that we were delivering, what we were talking about, the concepts and business models we were talking about, would be met with maybe a little skepticism from some of the industry. And yet suddenly overnight we've gone from niche to mainstream. And that's, whilst exciting, is also very unsettling. You know, it's this is what we were talking about for so long, and suddenly here it is. Everyone has no choice but to engage digitally. So yeah, it has been very, very unusual. And yeah, I don't, you know, I don't want to say that it's been good, but in a way, it's been good.
That's great to hear. I'm always happy to hear that there are good things coming out of this as well, because it can be difficult to focus on the positive aspects when everything is so uncertain. But it's probably something that is more of a personal question, because I really would love to know. Do you feel that it's more independent and smaller businesses who are now being in touch with you, trying to change logistics and things in the way they showcase and being more digital, or is it the big players who are reaching out now and really need help desperately?
Yeah, so I think we've always had a really good dialogue with independent designers. And I've always said for a very long time that those brands have always been much more agile and willing to take risks. What has changed dramatically is that those organizations who kind of knew what we were talking about, and I would direct that more to the larger brands, are now in a situation where they can't have a fashion show. You can't. There will be no Menswear Week in June. That September is extraordinarily unlikely to happen. So there is no choice. So really, it's been in terms of noticeable change, it's been the larger brands who have suddenly recognized that, oh my goodness, we have to work differently.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait for the next fashion week, or maybe it might be even called differently this time. Maybe it might be another week, it might be something else. Maybe we will get a full remake and be something, because it's more digital, be something more futuristic. I can't wait for that.
I mean, so that is what has to happen. I think kind of that essence, like seasonality was beginning to disappear anyway,
True.
but now kind of I think everyone is beginning to question, as we are in our personal lives, what is necessary, what is essential, and what even is the purpose of Fashion Week as it serves. I think there is still a place in the calendar for a celebration of what designers are doing and working on, but does that need to necessarily represent a new collection, new product? Could it be used in a more creative sense? So I think you'll see this kind of divergence between the showcasing element and then kind of that more practical business need. So what does digital showrooming becomes? Because I think there is still a very practical need if you are going to continue to sell physical product, which still would exist in some form, but maybe we can talk about retailing later on. But yeah, that the I think that very notion of everything that we have known before, it is time to put that to one side. And I mean, there is going to be resistance to change. There always was, but
They're always,
there is a massive opportunity to redefine what we know as the industry, and
Well, I
that has
agree.
to be exciting.
Yes, that's very true. So we spoke about the now, we spoke a little bit about the future, but as you know, this podcast is about the journey and about the past. So the first question that I always ask is if you could maybe describe your teenage years and tell us a little bit of how you grew up, maybe what sort of education you had, and also if you always knew who you want to become when you grow up.
Yeah, okay. So I grew up in London, northwest London. I now live in southwest London, so yeah, south of the River Rules. My teenage years were probably defined. I was sent away to school. I went to boarding school in Essex, and that was a kind of massive life shift. And I can that first sense of independence, and I can very clearly remember my parents leaving me at boarding school at 13, even though that, to some of the people around me was quite old. I was with people who have been boarding since they were 7 or 8, which seemed extraordinary. And it was something I loved. I had 5 years boarding, which was fun. Did I know what I wanted to be? Absolutely not. I knew what I loved. I knew what I enjoyed. And that was always more on a creative side. But I think I allowed myself to become part of a system that told you what to do. Kind of there was a path built for you. And I listened to careers advice at school that kind of said, well, that might be a subject you enjoy the most, but actually you should study this. So I went off to study history at university in London. And it was fine, but I think there were things that I could have explored that I didn't. So yeah, that's it was a fun time. But yeah, I guess my life from a personal perspective was defined much more by sport, gaming, video gaming, and my family at that time. So yeah, it was really happy memories. I loved being away from home. I think that was something that was fundamental and almost kind of built up this independence and desire to go off and see more of the world that I'd always had since I was young. My dad traveled a lot, spent a lot of time in the US, and it was something that I'd always wanted to replicate. So if I didn't know what I wanted to do specifically, I knew that I wanted a more international life. That was something that was very clear to me.
And you mentioned that obviously you listened to the grown-ups around you when it came to career advice and what to do, and that's why you went on to study history. Do you feel like the adults in your life reacted to the passions that you had, or was it more kind of not taking you seriously even if you expressed something that you want to focus on? Do you feel like there was a certain path that was already chosen for you, maybe by your parents, maybe by your teachers?
Yeah, it was certainly more by teachers. Mum and dad were always super relaxed about what I wanted to do, and would have been comfortable with me doing anything. But I think you kind of look at those people with authority, certainly then to guide you. And because I didn't have that complete clarity on what I wanted to do, It was like, well, that's what they say, so yeah, maybe I should trust in that. I'm not sure that it was kind of not looking at my passions or me not having the belief to follow those passions as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe an element of the two. And I think when I look back to going to university, like if I hadn't got my grades, then I maybe wouldn't have gone, and that would have forced me to follow some different pathways. But yeah, difficult to kind of land on what that driving influence was, but it was like what became easiest. And I think if there's one thing that I would have done, and kind of when I look at my kids now, is kind of find that passion point and just go do it, because you can make amazing things happen if you really love something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. So in retrospective, if you could choose what to study now, would it still be history or something else?
Oh, so I would have followed my pure geek and I would have gone computer science.
How important is higher education, do you think?
So I do think it's really important. And, you know, I can say that obviously from a biased perspective because I work at one of those institutions. But I do completely recognise that people were already questioning the value of higher education and will continue to do so if distance learning becomes much more embedded as part of the curriculum. But like, I think what we have to do as an institution is create those opportunities that give people a reason to come, that I think has become so vital in what we're doing as a team to allow access to technology, to hardware, to software that simply wouldn't be possible, and expertise that wouldn't be possible to access if you didn't follow that route. I think it still has massive value. And if it was me following that path now, I would be interrogating very closely what is that value that I'm going to get and what is the offer, because that relationship has changed so dramatically. I didn't have tuition fees to pay when I went to university. And if I was being asked to pay the fees that there are now, I'd want to know what that value is. And look, I think University of the Arts London is in an incredibly good position. You know, we are right at that forefront. And actually, as I look at the skill sets that are going to be required, creativity is going to be right at the core of what our society needs. And that value of what we bring is going to be recognised in a very different way in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could not agree more 100% to everything you're saying, and with especially the value thing. There's probably kind of a misassumption that when you go to a certain university or if you do a certain degree that it's a guarantee that you will get this or that type of job, but this changed dramatically because it's super difficult to enter the industry and to get into it. Even if you have the education, even if you went to university, it doesn't mean that you will have your dream job after that. Yeah, so that is very tricky. So how was it for you? So you went to university. I mean, we know what you do for work now. So obviously there must have been a shift somewhere.
There was. Yeah, so I kind of finished university still not really knowing what I wanted to do, and ended up working for Harrods. I went straight into retail, which I'd done throughout my university years. I used to work at a wine retailer and kind of had a passion which I carry on today of drinking far too much. I knew retail and I knew how to interact with customers, and so kind of finding my path within luxury was something which I really enjoyed for a number of years. So I was at Harrods for 3 years. But it, kind of that fundamental change happened when I was there. I went to Japan in 1997 for a holiday. My girlfriend at the time was on a gap year, and I went out to stay with her for 3 weeks in Japan. And it was kind of that moment. It was that defining moment for me, where kind of that sense of knowing that I'd always wanted to live and work internationally, and then kind of discovering the place that I wanted to be. And from literally the very first moment that I touched down, I flew into Kansai Airport in 1997, and the smell of Japan hit me.
And that's beautiful.
Like, every country has a smell.
Everywhere,
that, and it's so evocative, and I can still smell it to this day. And like, back in 1997, I think visitors to Japan were kind of under 2 million a year. It was not a usual destination for foreign holidaymakers. And I went down to the southwest of the country and stayed on Kyushu, and then worked my way up through Tokyo and Kyoto. And it was really a breathtaking experience for me to be somewhere so utterly different, for people to look at you as being so incredibly different. Like, seeing Westerners was very unusual. And that was it. I decided there and then that I would go back. And yeah, a couple of years later, I was fortunate enough to end up working there. I taught in a school for a couple of years in Kumamoto in the southwest of Japan, and ended up working for Japanese retailers. And I had 11 years working for Japanese retailers. So that was predominantly based in Europe, but I would spend about a quarter of the year in Japan between Osaka and Tokyo. And it became kind of my second home. But it was an amazing place to be exposed to emerging technologies, a different way of working, different retail. And I was tasked with roles of engaging with innovation and how to influence consumer behavior, both offline in a physical bricks and mortar sense, but the emerging kind of e-commerce space that in the early 2000s was just beginning to take hold. And I remember having those conversations where people would say, no one will buy anything online. It was really fascinating for me to be able to explore with technologies. And we did a lot of work that was engaging with bloggers in the early days, and we were doing shoppable video back in 2009. And
wow.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Do you think that Japan was kind of more advanced and further ahead with innovation, especially in the retail space, than the UK, for example?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. It was super traditional. I think working within a corporate structure in Japan is a really interesting use.
I imagine it being really hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really hard. But we were able to work mainly because we were an international team on ideas that were slightly out of the ordinary, and that allowed me a little bit more freedom to explore. So, you know, I think it was really good for that both sides to kind of see what was happening in a world where, kind of on a creative side, there is that element of expression but it remains very underground in Japan. That kind of creatives are always looked at as being outside of the box, and being outside of the box in Japan is a challenging way to work. But it's something that I love doing. And so my relationship with that country remains incredibly strong, and is something which has kind of been that guiding light of working in a different way. So yeah, that was kind of a fundamental shift for me, and has allowed me to kind of begin to build that portfolio of work that inevitably led me to doing something even more expansive.
So you spend a lot of time between Japan and the UK. You've explored all these opportunities. Retail was always your field of
yeah,
you know, expertise,
yep.
And still is.
Yeah.
So what happened then? Did you feel at some point that, okay, you want to be more independent now in the decisions you make and also the concepts that you get to work on? What was the next step in your journey?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it was a number of things. Like, as all things, as family comes in, you begin to look at work-life balance. And anyone mm-hmm. who's kind of works with Japanese companies knows that that's something that doesn't really exist. but that you want to explore different opportunities. We've been doing a lot of work with kind of Pure Fashion and Fashion Week and designer collaborations, and mm-hmm. you know, there was an opportunity at the college to begin to explore those ideas, but with a kind of really broad remit. And it just, it was an amazing opportunity and continues to be so. And so it was one mm-hmm. I just felt at the time was something I wanted to do. And like you looked at the opportunity, and like it was a 2-year contract to begin to build a yeah. proof of concept model, that there could be a group that could look at how designers engage with new and brands engage with new technologies, and could we build something to show that it could have longevity. And that's a risk that I took. Yeah.
When was it? What year are we talking about? When
so
it started?
That is 2013.
2013. Wow, incredible. So 7 years in, can yeah. you, I mean, I know it's difficult, but can you maybe share, I don't know, your two favorite projects or any kind of two amazing projects that you're really proud of in these 7 years? I know it's a very hard one.
Okay, so I can probably take the first one, which was a massive breakthrough one, which was our project with Richard Nickel and Studio XO and the Walt Disney Company. Mm-hmm. which was our Tinkerbell dress, which was the fiber optic dress, which went down the catwalk at Fashion Week in, I think, September 2014. Mm-hmm. And was one of those big moments for wearable technology where kind of everyone had been talking about how do you begin to fuse design with technology? Is it something that, will it always be clunky? And wearable technology always had such an awful perception.
Yeah.
And it was truly an amazing moment. So I remember very clearly standing at the end of the catwalk and seeing the dress walking towards me. And like, there were a lot of gasps at Fashion Week, as you well know. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those wow moments. And the reach was extraordinary. I think we had something like 200 million impressions on social media.
Wow.
My mobile phone at the time, and I can't even remember which phone it was, nearly melted with the kind of Twitter mentions that were coming through. And it was that one project which kind of projected us onto a much more global stage. And even to this day, that project still surfaces. And yeah, it was amazing mm-hmm. to work with the team at XO and just the extraordinary person that Richard was. Something that kind of enabled us to kind of begin to push boundaries in other areas that without that project, I'm not sure we would have gone on to what we've done today.
Do you think it's also kind of a personal milestone for you as well, that project?
Yeah, it was, because I think we had a vision of what we wanted it to be beforehand, and to kind of see it come to fruition and even go beyond that was mm-hmm. something really satisfying. So yeah, that was a really big one.
For the listeners, can we revisit that project? Can we see it somewhere for those who are not aware?
It is on the FIA website, so that's on fialondon.com. And
we will link it.
Yeah, you can take a look at it there. But if you Google Richard Nickel Tinkerbell, it will appear magically.
magically, yeah. Perfect. And then the second project that was kind of a groundbreaking one for the FIA and for you personally?
So I would say without a doubt, the other project would be our project with ILM X Lab and Stephen Tai in 2018. Mm-hmm. That really pushed boundaries in terms of what could be done with real-time rendered visual effects. And for many reasons was a completely an astonishing project to deliver in real time.
I agree, it was beautiful.
but also on a personal note, and I think you well know that working with Lucasfilm for me was a really big deal.
As yeah.
someone who grew up with Star Wars being a kind of core pillar of their childhood. To...
Well, you probably are the biggest Star Wars fan that I know. And you know David, so you know who I'm married to. And I'm still yeah. saying I think you are the biggest fan that I know. So that means something.
I think to be able to walk into Lucasfilm and work with the extraordinary talent that there is at Industrial Light and Magic and the Advanced Development Group at Lucasfilm and all of that coming together to be ILM X-Lab, it was amazing. It was kind of the things that dreams are made of. And so that project in itself was so visionary and far-reaching, kind of the idea that we could mix the real world with digital content and begin to envisage what this pure mixed reality world could look like feels so timely and relevant now. It's something that we always knew that digital content would have an impact on the fashion industry and that computer graphics could be used to begin to enhance creativity, to enhance storytelling, but also to begin to build new business models. And we kind of pulled it all together in 2018, but it was like 2 years of development to get there. So, I mean, our first conversations about the project started in 2015. And then we started to ramp it up from 2016 onwards. And yeah, February 2018 was when it dropped. So it was a big chunk of work over a long period of time. So to see it come to fruition and to be delivered to such high quality was amazing. And it still kind of sits there, particularly right now, as being an example of what you can begin to do when you add computer graphics to design and creativity in the real world.
No, it was a very beautiful project, I agree, and I'm sure it's going to be relevant for a very, very long time, because as you mentioned before, sometimes it takes a while for people to understand projects, but also for it to be relevant. And you're definitely always working a little bit of ahead of time, sometimes a lot ahead of time. So
That's the thing. So the majority of the projects have always been to envisage what's 3 to 5 years out, and kind of to pull out of research that kind of bleeding edge technology just to push boundaries and show this is possible. And this is, if this is possible now, just begin to follow that technology path and see what could come of that. And all of the discussions around digital fashion and digital showcasing were things that we were working on, you know, since the inception of that project in 2015, and had been talking about the need for brands to imagine beyond physical product, or how you could enhance physical product with digital content. And now here we are, surrounded by an environment where we can't go to physical stores, we cannot go to a physical show, and that digital content remains the only way in which you could begin to communicate your brand, or even begin to think about retailing your brand as well. And so there are so many opportunities for brands to do things in an interesting, exciting, extraordinary way. We want to see that. And I think there'll be a myriad of iterations of how that comes across, from very basic to more elaborate. But this is the opportunity that's ahead. And, you know, we're not going back.
No, I agree. There is no way back now, for sure. So you're very, very passionate about your work, about what you do. And we can hear that when you talk about your work, but also I've worked with you before and I know how passionate you are. How important is purpose for you, do you think, in general? And also one question kind of as an addition to that, why fashion? Why did you decide to focus on the fashion industry?
I mean, so let me first start with purpose. We're right now in a moment where you can begin to question everything around you. And I think it's one of those things that maybe comes with experience as well, and the opportunity to fall in love with what you do. There really isn't anything else in life. Why are we here? All of those massive questions that surround us. Like, I think there is an opportunity for us to follow your heart in doing something, to believe in what you do and to do it to the very best way that you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a consumer, I don't think you have an interest in anything else. Like if you can feel that from a brand, the way in which you interact, I don't think there's any room in the world for any brand that doesn't believe in what they're doing and genuinely believe it. I think, you know, there's so much nonsense out there. You just switch on the adverts on all of the commercials that sit around COVID-19 and they're all the same. You can hear the piano coming in and the somber music. It's like mm-hmm. there's an opportunity to exploit the situation. It's, I'm tired of that nonsense. There's, and consumers will be too. Just do it with passion and meaning. And all of the discussions that I see through the industry about transparency and sustainability is like, yes, some of them are difficult to do, but it's not difficult to be transparent if you want to be. Like, you don't need technology to demonstrate that. You can just be transparent. You can just say, this is what we do, because you know it. And if you can't do that, then there's a problem. And I, you asked why fashion. I guess it's that sense of creativity and expression that I've always wanted to explore. And is the industry anything than self-expression and communicating who you are as an individual, and that you mm-hmm. can do it in a way which feels right for you? Like that should be how we engage and how we choose to communicate and or to interact with the brands that we want to. That for me is what the industry is about, and emotion mm-hmm. and about sense of kind of creating magical moments. That's my retail background coming through. Like, none of us simply need to shop for anything. You have to feel it. There's got to be that buzz of, oh, I want it, and a sense of excitement around it. That's what fashion, that's what retail should be. And anyone who doesn't do that, oh, I'm not interested.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the customer isn't interested either. Probably they don't understand why they are into some products more than into others. But that's exactly what you're saying. People do buy for emotional reasons. And if there is no emotion behind it, and then there's no demand, so what's the purpose in it? Yeah. So this is the reason why I combined the purpose and the fashion question, because I kind of felt it. I kind of knew you will combine these two anyway. So now I would like to come probably to kind of more personal things. You shared your journey with us, your incredible journey, and we touched upon that a little bit. But if you could choose three milestones, and these don't have to be work related, they can be personal as well. What were your three milestones so far?
Oh, that's really tough. I mean, I think on a personal note, the arrival of children into your life kind mm-hmm. of changes perspective, and it's such a cliche, but I think kind of work consumed everything I did until that moment, and the realization that you become responsible for other people in your life mm-hmm. is something, and that there's something more important as well is something that was really shocking at the time. It's like I was all in corporate life at that time, and it changed everything for me. And almost to that purpose point, it certainly made me focus on what do I want to do and what gives me real pleasure in life. So that, for one, is kind of that big moment. I mean, I think I'd already had the international travel moment, and particularly Japan in 97 was a fundamental moment in life. So that's another mm-hmm. massive milestone. And I don't know about a third one, because I think at that point that I'm doing what I'm doing now, I like to try and move those milestones away, other than always going beyond what we've done before. Mm-hmm. That constant need for pushing boundaries and going further than before. And if that means that you look back and on a particular project as a milestone, I guess that could be it. But I think that's kind of the thing which I always land on as a defining moment. It's just being able to go beyond what we've done before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a lot of people who are saying that the third milestone or one of the milestones is still in the future, which I always love. I think it's a nice approach. You work a lot with emerging brands and young people in general and students as well. What do you think is, in your opinion, the skill of the future?
So those skills are changing dramatically, and I think it's really important for the industry to look at a technology roadmap of what is coming and how the industry is changing, and like that will really come into focus with the situation that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, we've spoken a lot publicly about the use of artificial intelligence in retail and in fashion, and you know, the response to that was always very divisive. So you always had these conversations landing between utopia and dystopia, that mm-hmm. either it would be this paradise where none of us are working and the government are paying us to be at home doing nothing, or we'll all be out of a job and robots are taking over our lives and doing these jobs. And suddenly I look around us, and certainly in the UK, how many, 6 million people being employed by the government to stay at home. Universal basic income has kind of crept into our lives, and almost without being noticed. Mm-hmm. And we are looking at how we spend our time and our creativity in very different ways. The skill sets that the industry is going to need in the future are going to be massively different. A lot of the jobs that we feared losing, suddenly people are saying, well, I don't want to go out of the house. I'd rather a robot come and do these deliveries. I find it amazing that the things that people were terrified about no less than 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago are now completely embraced. And so if computer science is something that the fashion industry wasn't really comfortable with in the past, it's something that's going to have to get very comfortable with in the future. Mm-hmm. When I look at retail, the business models and some of the proposals that are being put forward for how social distancing might work within a retail environment will be really challenging for the majority of retailers. So you can imagine that we are going to have a very different type of retailing in the future, where you can't have as many consumers and you can't sell as much physical product. I actually think that's a really good thing, that we were clearly consuming too much anyway. But what does that mean for you as a young designer? You're going to have to think about different business models. You are going to have to think about what you need. Like in the past, it would be really unusual for me to see someone with design skills who could code in Unity and Unreal. Yeah. But now I'm beginning to see those, and we're going to need to see more of those. Within retail, like, well, we're going to need more data scientists, without question. Those skills which traditionally sat within the movie industry, within the gaming industry, within pure computer science, are going to become much more widespread within the industry. And it's those that will allow for the new business models that will define what the industry looks like in the future. When we start to see those coming through and graduating, we will have that new industry. I mean, it's going to be forced upon us in the short term, but longer term, you will start to see those people coming through.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. As someone who works in the fashion industry as well, I do think also having a mixture of skills maybe will be quite handy, because as you mentioned before, there was either you have design skills and you do that, or you have coding skills and then you do a very different type of jobs. But mixing them or finding different type of people to join forces.
I mean, I think that hybrid nature will be crucial in the future. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're already seeing, and I think you'll just see an acceleration of it.
Yeah, probably coming in faster as well, as what you mentioned before, the pandemic like that is shifting time a little bit and bringing things that we expected to happen maybe a few years down the road. It's going to be sooner now.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think that that acceleration of innovation is inevitable, and kind of the behavioral change that we thought would take 5 to 10 years to happen is suddenly forced upon people.
Yeah, that's true. So we started this conversation with your teenage years, and I'd love to end the conversation with the teenage years as well. If you could give your younger self one advice, what would it be?
That is a really good question, and I have a really solid answer. And it's kind of what I would say to anyone, is that fall in love with what you do and find out that thing that gives you the most enjoyment and satisfaction, and regardless what anyone else tells you, follow that path, because it will be the road that gives you most satisfaction and enjoyment, and ultimately it should be what you want to do that fills everything in your life. So yeah, I cannot imagine being in a position where I'm doing something that I dislike. And if you bring that level of excitement, enjoyment and speciality, and become a master of it, of whatever your chosen path, then you will become very valuable to people around you and to the industry that you're part of. So it would be that. It would be, Matt, just go do what you love and you'll be all right. And if someone had given me that confidence to do it, then maybe I'd be doing this even earlier than I did. But look, I can't complain. I love what I do. So it turns out my path was okay. But I think
it's more than okay, Matthew.
it's just a slightly circuitous route of getting there. So, you know.
Yeah, but that's also part of it, right? I think your advice is beautiful. But yeah, also sometimes you need to take that extra stop or that extra turn left or right or whatever that might be. And it's never wasted time, right? So whatever you do, if you end up doing what you love, it was worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it would be that. It's like it's never a straight line, and you're going to go through some difficult moments, and that's okay, because that is what life is about.
That's part of it. Yeah, I agree. Matthew, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us and for your time.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Connecting People. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to find out more about our guests, simply check out the show notes or visit our website, sabina.com. That's sabina.com. This is a weekly podcast, and a new episode is released every Sunday, so make sure you join us again.